Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Empire. When football seasons get longer, training for it must also adjust.
2 weeks out from wherever you're tapering into, you can't become more fitter. We can't make a guy fitter in 2 weeks, can't make him faster in 2 weeks, but doing too much and having residual fatigue can have effect.
That's Jamie Heppner, Director of Applied Sports Science for Football at Catapult, where modern NFL football players are adjusting to a new normal. This is the Future Sport Podcast. I'm Bram Weinstein. There's been a movement in high-level athletics that has a broad definition: load management. Resting, practicing less, playing fewer games in some instances has become a new norm in sports. It's a tricky subject for leagues who know paying customers aren't interested in understudies. Resting your best is not the norm of the NFL, though, with rosters and competition razor thin. And now with the season longer than ever before, staying healthy is what will make the difference between winning and losing. Our guest this week is Jamie Heppner. He's the Director of Applied Sports Science for Football at Catapult, which these days is helping the NFL, their teams, and their players leverage player performance. And considering the season has been lengthened, it is necessary. Hey, Jamie, how are you?
Doing well, Brad. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us, our listeners will be familiar, obviously, about Catapult. Tell us a little bit about your role with the company and what you do.
Look, my role has evolved over the years, but most recently it is essentially, helping our highest caliber football clients here in the US, make sense of the data is probably the most eloquent way of putting it, and really trying to find some insights and really go deep down in that rabbit hole, 7 years on since I joined the company. And that takes a lot of, shapes and forms and working with different people in different organizations from, analytics to strength and conditioning coaches, head coaches, some assistants, people that are front office or football office. But essentially it is the consulting arm of the business and how do we get a competitive edge to win football games with this stuff?
All right. So what have you learned about the modern football player? What have you learned about their bodies?
How long you got?
as long as you need.
Yeah. I mean, I moved to the States 7 years ago, and I thought I knew what I was, see. And it has been just a learning curve, that whole piece. I guess there's been a certain way of doing things for a long time in the NFL, and there is a real competitive advantage that I've seen teams find the balance between the hard-nosed, old-school approach of building capacity, work, callousing guys, and first and foremost, not messing them up. And it seems to be that intersecting, area of not babying these guys, not using the numbers to make excuses, right? I've talked about it before and the Tomlin way, the standard is the standard. Having a certain aspect of using numbers to say, this is what is required to win football games physically. But also, you're no good to us if you're tired and beat up and worn out on Sunday. And finding a way to balance that, I'd say, is one of the big things I've learned. What have I learned about the athletes involved? My time, working firsthand with a few has been, they are incredible, best in the world. And I've seen some from around the world. And, the amount of, they're fast and explosive in those pieces, of course. I can't believe how much they can tolerate. I think what I thought coming in was these guys are quick sprinters and great, but you know, soccer and football players back in Australia, you know, they do the volume. I mean, anecdotally, high look. In the NFL, they seem to run further in a week of practice than we did back home in the AFL, would have shocked me 10 years ago to think it. It wasn't the face value. So just world-class talented athletes, just God-given, many of them, who can tolerate the load. And I think, you know, where I've seen competitive advantage has not been of, I'm going to make a guy fit or make a guy, you know, whatever. You know, they're good without you. How do you identify some of the real, like, game-winning, double down on, you know, maybe for an outside small receiver, it is, you know, true speed capacity because he's already quick. Saying you can make a quick guy quicker, A, is probably, you know, some ego speaking as a coach, but also making a guy 2% quicker, it's probably not going to help because route choice and scheme is going to dictate so much of whether he catches it. Making him be able to run 45, you know, passing plays in an offensive, you know, Sunday, probably has more to do with, you know, his ability. You know, empowering him to use the talents and traits he already has is probably a good approach. So I'd say just unbelievably shocked and impressed how good these guys are.
I mean, I think a lot has changed here. The amount of practices have been decreased significantly as that's been negotiated between the NFLPA and the NFL itself. And it sounds like you're on board with that because I think some fans hear that and they're doing less practice and less work and they're not going to be ready. It's that old school mentality of you got to run into a brick wall 8 million times to win a Super Bowl. It sounds like it's kind of music to your ears that these guys' bodies have needed this break.
Yeah, I wouldn't say – I won't comment either way, Bram. How about that? You know, I wouldn't right. say I'm for it or against it. I'll say that it widens the gap on what guys choose to do with their own time. And it probably helps good teams, you know, hurts good teams in terms of their mentality, right? If you're a team that practices like a college team and beats the hell out of the players, which isn't necessarily bad, you know, time away from practice can be good, right? To give guys a rest. If you don't do that, you know, and I don't know, you're missing out on time with, you know, a superstar quarterback to catch balls up in, maybe it's a disadvantage. You know, there's no, I'd say, necessarily true rule. But I will say that, and we've seen this from just interaction with individual players, that it puts more of an onus on the player to do something quality in his, because he has control now of his time away from the team. So if he does poor, you know, practice on his own account or conditioning or has a bad personal coach, because they all have personal coaches, then we can see some diminishing returns and by extension or, you know, by extension and that competitive advantage for guys that do it well. So it's probably enhanced the market or the area that is conditioning away. And COVID really exemplified that with not having OTAs last year. And so we've seen more and more players, you know, reach out and say, we use this at a team, Catapult. We use your, you know, my coach uses your insights, video, wearable devices, sports science consulting. We have less time at the team now. How do I get it for me?
Yeah.
I got money. I got time. I got my own personal set of coaches. How do I get set up? And 3-4 years ago, we never had any. And now we're seeing a significant number of NFL players reach out and say, let's get set up.
Can you talk about the process of gathering the data, getting this information, communicating it back to whether that's the coach, the trainer, the team, or the player in this case, and how to educate them on how to train properly by using all of this data?
Well, it takes many forms, so it's kind of hard to put a blanket on that. I'll give you some scenarios, though. It really depends on, once again, you know, kind of need. If a guy has a really great staff around him in his personal sense, and he's got a team that he plays for that he trusts, you know, it really is going to be preparing for camp, right? Like camp's going to be camp's going to be here, right? Like how do I ramp up and ensure we're doing some of the same content that to prepare me for what it is, you know, I'm not running on the beach or doing Pilates, you know, it's not completely different content. It is relevant to football. And then also the volume ramps up. So we don't have this real significant shock to the system. there are some different iterations of that. Different, you know, different teams use things differently. If you're coming back from a, you know, an injury-plagued season, then it's going to be more dictated by the athletic trainers who have a plan for your return to play. So it's probably not going to be running routes and things like that. You know, if you're not in a skill position, you know, it's going to be probably some more specific movements that aren't running conditioning uphills and things like that if you're a left tackle. So it varies team by team, but generally it is the staff at the team communicating what the demands are going to look like in the first week of camp. We know that's the most risky for injuries. We know the first couple preseason games are the most, you know, risky time or most prevalent time. And so here's where we're aiming for. Be ready for this. And the numbers can quantify that. Now, some common, you know, some common pieces are total volume, right? Like what, how many yards do we expect you to run in the first few practices? How much high speed running do we expect if you're an outside guy? You know, what's the work to rest ratio, right? Like how much do you, here's the total, but how much do we expect to see you in a 10 minute team run period or a team pass period, to prepare for that worst case scenario? And then, you know, that's been aided and facilitated by, driven by COVID, the NFL really integrating some mandates around that. And this is no state secret, you know, like the ramp period, you know, removing a preseason game and really, I guess, taking some of that, uncertainty away and saying, okay, the first 3 or 4 days of camp have to look like this, can be no more than this as determined, by the league and having some understanding. That was, those decisions were data driven. You know, they didn't make them on a whim. That was from recording, looking at teams' injury, but also their wearable data and their workload and what led to that decision was informed.
And staying on this idea of having a plan, ramping up to camp, ramping up towards a regular season, and then, you know, best laid plans, ramping up towards the end of the season when the games matter most, and then hopefully into the playoffs. Have you kind of come to a conclusion that you're seeing some trends by which collectively, and obviously injuries happen, and those are things that are out of control, knee injuries, head injuries, whatever it may be in the case of playing a sport like this. But have you seen any kind of trends as you've gone through this work that could help a team collectively put its best foot forward to the right type of condition to excel at the most critical time of a season?
That's a great question. This is one I have an extensive amount of answers for that I can't give. I walked the line a little bit here.
Right.
I'd love to give you some stories on this one, but it's probably, you know, an area that I work, you know, most commonly with some of these teams. So I'll do my best to answer, you know, without giving some specifics away. You know, it starts with how we use the data or how anyone uses some of this data. And really the two halves, right? Like looking at what happened and then taking that over a number of years or expertise and using the data to dictate, right? To plan, to have a schedule of things. And it's far more useful that way, right? Like if we're looking at what happened, it's already happened and we are reactive, saying here's the plan and being proactive. We need to be unloaded here, or we know this is the risk part here. Make sure practices aren't more than this, and this. And the good teams that are doing it, and there is a number of teams doing this, by the way, like a significant amount. It is so relevant to the variables, you know, of your team. And I'll give some examples. If you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and you're defending your Super Bowl title, we do not want to be up and going or like primed or perfect at week 17. We don't expect that to be our most important game. We expect February to be our most important month. Now, if you're the Detroit Lions.
Oh, be careful. Be careful who you pick. Go ahead.
And I say that with the utmost of respect. I've just recently moved to Michigan, so I'm a resident of Michigan. Love for the Lions, right? But our goal and expectation, if we can win our division or even get a wild card this year, let's see what can happen, right? Like that's our, I guess, not goal, but, you know, reality. And so week 17 is important. We want to win as many regular season games as possible. If you're the Bucks, you got the best team, you know, best stacked team. We expect to win enough games to at least get a wild card. And therefore, we can kind of put all our eggs in that basket of being playoff, you know. So it's hard to chase them, these good teams. And you put Kansas City or probably the Rams up, you know, now these sorts of teams. So how you plan or what you're shooting for is big. And my approach to that generally, or, you know, a lot of other teams as well, is the pro forma of an Olympic taper, right? Like if you're running 100 meters in the Olympics, there's a pretty clear model of, you know, it's well-documented research and things like that, doing your volume early and not doing all your work in that period. Understanding that 2 weeks out from wherever you're tapering into, you can't become more fitter. We can't make a guy fitter in 2 weeks. Can't make him faster in 2 weeks. But doing too much and having residual fatigue can have effect. So, you know, doing that work early and coming down is a pretty good approach. But, you know, the nuances that come into that, some examples, you know, Monday night games, Thursday night games, and bye weeks are real considerations of not only, like, how do we set that up and manage that from a workload standpoint so we play well there.
Yeah.
But the implication, you know, following that, you know, you could have a bye week, regular week, and a Monday night game in 3 weeks, and they could all be, you know, significant travel weeks potentially, right? How do you manage that?
Yeah.
What does your team need to perform well there, but then also not be beaten up because of it, you know, not spend all your tokens.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, since you mentioned the Thursday game, and I know this is a dangerous question, I don't want to get you in trouble with the league, but how do you think about that, the turnaround that everybody has to go through at some point during the season where they play on a Sunday and then they play on a Thursday?
What do I think about it? Well, I think about it. ain't no sympathy, ain't no excuses in this league. you know, get it done, man. Get a win, you know, like figure out a way to be better than the other team on that Thursday. So, you know, bottom line there.
But the toll on the body certainly has got to be different.
Yeah. Oh, it is significantly. But we're not going to sit here and complain that we have a Thursday night game on national TV and that it's, you know, it's whatever. Shit, man. That pays the bills.
You know, yeah.
Like, and a win is all that matters. So I'll never be critical or you know, positive, negative about the fact that we do it. I will say that I've seen a number of teams, you know, years gone by that we've sat down there and said, what are we going to do for this Thursday week? It's a short week and we've got to travel away to the West Coast, you know, whatever the conversation is. And we've put something in place and we've looked better because it was a Thursday night short week, because we're in our own way, right? We did the minimum, you know, like meat and potato stuff that week. And I've seen teams be better on a Thursday night game short week than they were if they were, you know, on a Sunday. And not anecdotally, I'm saying numbers to prove it. Look at the numbers. Like we smoked this team, whether it was defense or offense or, you know, whatever. So it's not a hard line. We're going to be worse off from this. You just have to put the right things in to make sure you're better. You know, there's the teams that sit around and I guess, you know, say, well, this is a problem. We lost because it was on Thursday. I guess there's teams that make something happen. And I think that's true for many people inside and outside.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is a challenging situation that we're in. Okay. How are we going to make it positive?
Tell me about the addition of a 17th game and how teams and you all are looking at the extension of the regular season and how teams are kind of thinking through getting through it healthy and getting through that with peak performance.
Probably a similar conversation, isn't it? It's like, you know, like it is an extra game. I think the way it was done was brilliant, you know, by the league. there was it. Yes, there's a game at it, but haven't seen some of the media releases and whatnot. You know, it was a data-driven decision. It was, okay, we understand and we know that there's a significant risk in preseason games. We're going to remove one of those games and in lieu of that, add a 17th game. So, you know, the net result, you know, there's probably, you know, winners and losers, you know, like implications and people can have opinion. I'll stay out of that conversation. But the net result of this thing is pretty clear in the data that's been presented of, you know, the total big picture of a year, maybe not a season, but, you know, we've got one less preseason game and we've got one more regular season.
Teams aren't thinking about this differently in terms of what we were talking about before, where they're setting up a plan for how they can collectively get their teams to peak. Are they thinking about this differently? Because, I mean, you and I both know that a preseason game is not a regular season game. There's a lot less people. There's a lot more strain. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess those comments were more on the side of, you know, the league's decision to do it.
Yeah.
I thought it was done really well.
Yeah.
You know, like it could have been. How are teams doing with it? Well, without speaking to any specific team, Bram, you probably know as well as I do, NFL teams operate in 7-day cycles and 7-day windows.
That's right.
It's very much, what are we doing this Sunday? Yes, teams have planned, and like we talked about before, that kind of progression and periodization. But I'm not sure the real implication or, you know, like nuances of the 17th game has. I'm not sure we've really seen it yet. You know,
yeah.
Like the things have been put into place for that extra game and a slightly longer season, but I'm not sure that the worlds have been changed because of it yet. And I'm not sure we really understand what it all means until we get there. My guess is it won't change a whole lot. My guess is that, you know, that week-to-week mentality comes into play and we don't really see until the playoffs maybe.
Yeah.
You know, a certain team here and there that was like took advantage or was, you know, like diminishing effects of it. It's really, really too early to say until we go down that rabbit hole, I think. I think it would be very individual, like the timing of a bye, right? Like if you have a real late bye, I think this can almost benefit you versus if you play a team that has an early bye.
I agree.
Because your stretch is so, you know, so a short late season stretch is so much easier than a long late season stretch for that extra piece. Like the crossover of divisional play and you know, and that extra, it matched up so nicely with 16, you know, with 16 games, right? Where you play in division a certain amount and then you play the whole of another division or half. Like this, it kind of makes it uneven. So like if your one extra division game is a good team versus a not so good team, I won't quote any team names here.
Well, I'll tell you one, because Washington just had theirs at Buffalo.
Okay.
Their extra game was at Buffalo.
That's the perfect example.
Yeah.
At Buffalo. So if you're at, you tell me, you're at, well, you know, like a divisional loser from last year, if that was your 17th once off out of division or like single division tack on, that's a significant competitive event.
Yes.
Let's look at a good division, right? Everyone's saying the best division in football, the NFC West, right? If you're because you're not going to play all the same as that 17th. So if the Seahawks play the Bills, right, and the Cardinals play, I won't quote it, or the Jags, right, like, you know, and that's no disrespect to the Jags, they're in a wheel-butting phase. That could be like a season deciding, you know.
Yes, 100%.
Now, that used to be that all played out in the wash because, you know, there was an even amount of games with 16. Not so much now. It might take 4 or 8 years for that to play out. And this window of being that, you know, a competitive division will have gone. So that's a nuance that is there. But once again, we in our world, you know, we can't complain about it and that don't help anyone. But How do we get around it?
Yeah.
You know, what do we do? What do we do about it? And how do we plan for this thing?
Nothing. It's the job. And I'm with you. Week to week, it doesn't matter. What happened before, what happens in 3 weeks doesn't matter. I know how the NFL cycles work. All right. Yeah. All right. Last thing for you. Give me a forecast ahead, 3-5 years. What are you guys working on with NFL teams and athletes that will be important to them and important to Catapult to learn about?
So, the things that we've kind of released in the recent history have been, around specificity, right? Like we've got quality algorithms and metrics that are sport specific, and we've continued to dive down that rabbit hole. And recently we've brought them out across different sports of, analyzing running mechanics and quarterback metrics, partnering with Wilson in the past of smart balls and lineman metrics. And so we're really, doubling down on that front, specificity. We think our technology is extremely accurate and robust, and that the next frontier is in prescriptive data. Describing what happened and then what to do about it in terms of the data science side, right? Like the analytics side. I think that's pretty well validated by the market. We certainly have done our research and think it is, right? Like, the NFL teams, it's the new arms race. It's the new arms race that is spending money on interpreting not only, wearable data, but lots of data. More and more, we're seeing the results of some of that decision, like fourth down decisions to go for it or not. I mean, I love the moment with the Ravens and John Harbaugh going out to his quarterback and saying, "You want to go for this, Lamar?"
Listen, it doesn't take a lot of data to know giving the ball back to Pat Mahomes is a bad idea.
No, but it makes you sleep at night making the decision easier. Right?
I agree.
It's still an executive decision of that coach. And I love that. Like,
you like it when the math is on your side. You love it when the math is on your side.
He still made it, but that the Ravens, week in, week out before that, are saying, yes or no.
Right? That's right.
It's telling you you're better off to make this call. So when you're standing there, you're saying, "I'm going to make this call," but it's backed by these decisions. How many other aspects of our, winning culture, like football IQ decisions, can we use data to empower? And that's the space I think we're really excited to be in. And in the next 3 to 5 years, you'll see it. The great thing is, and the reason that, you should use Catapult if you're an NFL team, is that I don't even know what they look like necessarily, right? And if I did, you wouldn't need us. You know what I mean? Like, if your eyes could see it and you said, I really want to be able to make this thing better or whatever it is, or this decision, well, man, just make it. It's the pieces that we can't even, foreseeably know right now. And that's why it's so exciting. And having data to empower things that your eyes can't see. So I think that's the piece. And what does that look like? I think that's, big picture, when we see these 100 instances of, this in the wearable data or in the video data, right? When we see a team run man coverage all the time in practice and on game day, and that, dictates lots of high speed running. What is the implication of that on physical performance? That's pulling something out of the sky, but the millions of things of, bringing multiple data sets together, because, Catapult does more than just wearables and video. When we see this tactical piece from our video suite combined with this piece of our wearable suite, right, it means this outcome. And not just this time, the hundreds of times we've seen it across your history. You make the decision of what to do about it, but that's what we see. I think that's where the future is. And certainly that's what teams are trying to get to and where we aspire to be the world leader in.
Jamie Heppner is the Director of Applied Sports Science for Football at Catapult. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Bram. Pleasure.
On the next Future Sport podcast, youth leagues are coming out of COVID.
In areas of the country, I think there's obviously varying levels of precautions and protections being put in place. But, I think everyone is really focused on the positive impact that sports do have on the children's mindsets and the mental health, and, trying to balance that with the risk of the pandemic right now.
That's Pete Frinzales, CEO at TeamSnap, where the lessons of the pandemic may be that local mentorship and leadership matter more now than ever. That will do it for this episode. As always, the future is now. This is the Future Sport Podcast. I'm Bram Weinstein.